On the first Wednesday of the month, we come together as regenerative entrepreneurs all across the world. This is the only place where I could say that I want to see tremendous growth in this industry, is regenerative-related industries.
Hello, and welcome to the Permaculture Vine Podcast. My name's Cormac, and today we welcome Joshua Pereira. Welcome, Josh.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thanks, Cormac, for inviting me.
Well, you've got a very special number, episode 50.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I don't normally say the numbers, but it's since it's 50, we've been doing them a year now, so I'm well chuffed to get this far.
Yes, is this the year marked as of this episode? Because that's exciting.
Yeah, roughly a year. It's episode 50. I think I done the first one last year in February. And then there were some barren spells, and I've sort of picked up recently. I've done more than one just to sort of try and catch up myself.
I feel you. I have been podcasting for a little bit, and I feel like I have to take breaks here and now and then. But yeah, it's good to, if you can make it the year, I think you can make it for several, right? That's my thought.
Yeah, well, I'm happy enough. I'm enjoying it. Still learning. And I love chatting to people, just hearing what they're up to in their journeys. So we'll get to yours then. Josh, how did you discover permaculture, and when did you first hear the term?
This is the fun one, because I really do like the story that's behind this. The first time I heard the word permaculture, I can't really recall. As it's been, I don't know, like 12 years ago, maybe. Yeah, probably somewhere around there, right? So I'll tell you kind of the story that's, I tell most people. It was Emily, my wife, that's found out about this weird type of building structure called earth bag structures. It's an earthen building type that's out of sandbags, right? And I come home. My wife was actually, Emily was trying to search for ways that we could purchase or build a home ourselves with our own cash without getting a loan, right? And so we were trying to figure this out, and we were sustainability nerds, but we had never really heard of anything like permaculture. And when I came home, she was really excited, and she's like, I think she prefaced the conversation of like, I have to tell you about something and you're going to think it's really weird and you're probably going to say no. And she was like saying all these different things, but I think I really, really like it. I want you to say yes. I'm like, okay, what is this? So
everyone's a nightmare.
Yeah. or maybe a dream. I don't know. Right. So she goes over to the computer, we get on the computer, and she starts showing me these images and videos and articles on earth bag building. It's supposed to be this, you can do it yourself. You use site sourced material, except for the bags and all of these different things. And then it looks like like an Adobe house, and they kind of call it super Adobe as well. And I'm like, this is really cool. And so kind of longer story into a shorter story, that was the beginning of our like regenerative or permaculture journey, was this idea that we could build this home out of earthen materials and try to create this self-sustaining home. It was alongside that we tried to start building this home, and we ran into all of these different crazy challenges in doing so. We couldn't get it past code. We couldn't build in our current area. We had to go find another place. And as we were trying to get all of these things, because we kind of fell in love with Earthbag, we found out about permaculture because we actually had to purchase a larger plot of land. And then we started looking into like, how do we do this sustainably? How do we get this larger piece of land and actually be greater stewards of it? If we're going to buy land, we want it to be greater stewards, and we had to buy more land because we had to do this more rural experience with this type of building structure. So that was like the introduction. And once I found out about permaculture, it was almost like the big rabbit hole that we kind of took with Earthbag Homes. And it just led to another rabbit hole and led to another rabbit hole, I feel. So that's the, I guess, around this, I can't exactly pinpoint when it was that we found about permaculture, but we were in the middle of building this and trying to build this Earthbag Home. Is when I first found out about permaculture. Well, it more so on like the land design side of it, not necessarily on the gardening or whatever, right? But then we started getting into the gardening side of it as well.
Yeah, well, fair play to you from taking it from that first step of the computer. He's actually trying to build it. A lot of people just stop there. So that's a really positive thing. And then, so you mentioned the land design. How did you sort of get stuck onto that? Was it YouTube or courses or?
Well, we had seen like PDC. We were trying to figure out ways that we could like teach ourselves how to like responsibly steward the land. And so we were, I think we ran into like the PDC model. We had run into several different books, you know, obviously Bill Mollison's book, but the one that really like stood out to me was actually David Holmgren's book, The Principles and Pathways book, right? And that, when I was reading through that, it was more like I had found like a philosophy to look at how we interact with our environment and design in such a way. And so that to me was like the what really started getting me to think about like this property that we were purchasing. We didn't actually follow through with that particular property. We got under contract and then realized that the cost structure was that we were going to have to take out a loan. And so it was like not because of trying to get it past code, we had to do a different type of building model along with Earthbag, which was just like post and beam infilled with bags. And so it didn't really make sense for us, you know? And so we didn't do that land. And then we purchased some land in Montana, but that entire time, well, then there's a big period in between when we got out of contract with that land and then got into, purchased our land in Montana. And that period of time, I was always thinking about, well, now I'm thinking about like getting more than like a few acres of land, right, to do this. And it was always, how can I turn this plot of land? And specifically, I was thinking high desert, like everywhere in Montana, Utah, most of the land that you buy is usually in high desert areas, unless you're like up in the mountains, right? And so we had found some high desert land. And so it was essentially trying to figure out how you can like rehabilitate this very arid area that's also very temperate. And that was really appealing to me and just got me really excited. I'm also now in a very different part of the world. I'm in Panama, which is definitely not high desert temperate climate, but so that's where it really kind of originated, was like, how do I actively steward this land and do it in a way that's like makes it so much better than what it currently is, right? And like transform it and into like a Garden of Eden, essentially, right?
Did you eventually get the land in Montana?
We did get the land in Montana, and we spent a big like 3.5 years trying to build out this off-grid farmstead that we eventually we kind of gave up on. And I wouldn't even say gave up on. We literally failed by the end of it. We kind of froze out. It was like either we froze it out, meaning like I was building on the property, our earth bag home, and where Emily and I were both. We had three kids, three really young kids, and two kids and one on the way, I think. Is that what was happening around then? I forget. And so we were doing all of these different things. We were in over our head, and we were both living, the entire family. We had an Airstream trailer that was kind of acting as our storage and office, and this fifth wheel trailer that was acting as our home, right? And that winter, we had frozen out of that trailer, right? Because it got really, the first really bad snowstorm froze our wastewater system, right? I couldn't keep it warm enough because we had some challenges with our propane. We had a propane leak. And so I literally had to move off the land. And when we were thinking about doing that, it was like the breaking point. It was like, either we continue doing this farm and we ruin our marriage. That's what it felt like it was going to happen, because we were just at each other's throats. We were frustrated about the expectations of what we were trying to do versus what was actually happening. And so it was either that or go move back to the city, essentially. And so we decided this isn't going to cost our marriage. We're going to move back to the city. We'll keep the land and maybe we'll come back to it. And our dream was to come back to it. We never did. But so 3.5 years after us initially trying to start that farmstead, we came back to the city. So, yeah. But we did take the journey, and it was definitely a learning experience.
Well, I guess what's kind, you went, you tried it, and it's a permaculture principle, isn't it? You sort of make that change when you need to observe. And
yeah, we failed a big permaculture principle, which is slow and small solutions, because we really bit off way too much than what we could actually take on. And that was a huge learning experience for us, for sure.
I always forget the trail. I need to write them up in the back of this monitor so I can quote them better.
Yeah, right. There's a few that I just quote all the time because I have so many lessons around those, you know.
Right, so you moved back to land. So we'll not go through all the details, all the land details. I think that's a good starting point where your discovery. So your profession is a marketer, is it? Or would that be, what is your profession?
Yeah. Yeah, so around the same time that we found out about like the earth bags, we also found out, well, I was also really diving into my career as a marketer and a salesperson, as well as, just an entrepreneur. I was getting involved with a bunch of younger startups, startups that were my friend's startups. And I was so afraid to actually do my own startup that I got involved in theirs and went to school for entrepreneurship at the University of Utah. So that's kind of at that same time that I'm finding this thing called permaculture and earthen building or natural building, I'm exploring my career in marketing. And I started off with a really great company called Reading Horizons that we were basically selling education curriculum for struggling readers. And it was a really great research-based program. And I felt like I was actually like really helping to change people's lives in that regard. And so I really got excited about marketing for a really cause-driven business. And it that kind of led me into wanting to be someone that's creating messaging and building, because I knew that it was so needed to get a good business's message out there, right? But when I started actually working for other companies as an in-house marketing director, I realized that not all companies are created equal or even ones that want to do good or have maybe what they think is good is not necessarily good, right? And I found myself when we moved back, I had been doing consulting work, marketing consulting work for a number of different businesses while we were on the property. And that was kind of like able to keep us on the property while we were building the farm. But when I moved back, I was like, I'm going to create an agency. I'm going to build a branding agency. And I found a business partner, a friend of mine who was a really beautiful creative. And he had won some awards for film and was a great marketer messenger as well. And so we got into business together thinking that we'd build this branding agency and we would have these huge budgets to work with to build pretty things essentially, right? And great marketing campaigns. And again, I got into this space of like, I want to help good businesses. I want to help businesses that are actually making good change. But what I found is they were kind of few and far between when we were finding clients, right? And so I started working in businesses that were very much my skill set became high growth branding and messaging, right? And marketing and branding campaigns that were for high growth businesses. And helping them to get their message dialed so that it would really take off. And that was a lot of high growth industries like consumer products, tech products, a lot of industries that necessarily did not need to see growth, right? They needed to see more degrowth. And that was just obviously something that kind of tore at me because I had found out about permaculture, the regenerative movement, all around the same time as moving into my career. And that it kind of killed me a little bit to have a skill set that I enjoyed doing, but also being that skill set, not necessarily being used for the ways that I wanted it to be used. Right.
I'm sure a lot of our listeners are the same, that they're in careers they don't want to be in. But one thing I would say is try and use that skill set for good. I think you're a great example of that. And how you've sort of balanced the two, should I say, over the years. So how do you get away from that at the end of...
So it was a hard choice actually, and there was some sacrifice in that. And so I thought about maybe just finding a business that I could work in house as a marketing director for that I could really believe in, kind of going back to like my roots with Reading Horizons, where I really started learning my marketing skill set. But I struggled with that because I felt as an entrepreneur, I had a really hard time not, working on someone else's dream, essentially, right? I would get involved in someone's project. And I always get really involved with anybody's business if I'm doing work for them or I'm working in the business. And I didn't want to get involved with another business and dedicate my life to it without like really truly thinking that I could dedicate my entire life to doing that, right? And I had some entrepreneurial ideas that I wanted to try out that were related to the regenerative movement. And so when we were starting to get some decent clients with our branding agency, I kind of ducked out and said, I'm going to exit right here. I know we're not doing, we're not the biggest brand agency. We weren't doing horrible, but we were just barely getting started. So I think my business partner was like, oh man, you're leaving me now. You know, he was a little jaded about it. And, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to pursue this idea with Emily. And so Emily and I, we exited our branding agency because Emily was actually a creative director in that agency. And we were doing a lot of the work, we were doing a lot of things all together. And so we moved out of that agency and we started this podcast while we were doing that, just to kind of do the market research for how we might be able to serve the regenerative movement in the way with our own skill sets, right? And so it's the Seeds of Tao podcast. And I think we're on episode, I don't know, like 130 or something like that. And we've taken a few breaks in between. But that's what really started our business, the Seeds of Tao business. We had this thought that we have the skill in entrepreneurship. We have the skill in marketing and branding. And we got to be able to utilize that somehow. But really, beyond that, we were just exploring, right? We were talking to everybody we could possibly could talk to. And some of those became interviews on our podcast. Some of them just became really great conversations that we had. What we landed on was there, we were trying to scratch our own itch, essentially, of there was no support when we were on our off-grid farmstead in a lot of ways, right? We were, our neighbors around us were looking at us like, oh man, you're kind of funny looking. You guys are kind of doing something weird. I don't know. We'll help you out on building your house and whatnot, but you guys are a little, you're kind of weird, right? And we would get a lot of that. We would get a lot of just not really understanding, I think. And there wasn't, you know, there's a big learning curve, but there's also a big valley of death for entrepreneurs that are doing regenerative entrepreneurial work. Whether you're starting a farm or you're building something in ag tech or soil or whatever it is, right? If it's doing regenerative work, there's a bigger valley of death than you have for a normal entrepreneur. And so we decided that that was going to be our business model is to build a net. It's actually a platform. So our Seeds of DAO is a platform for education and support of regenerative entrepreneurs. And that's been our focus is to help entrepreneurs gain the skill sets that they need within their business. And then go out and try to build that business, but be supported through incubation and acceleration programs. And what we're trying to do is also build out bioregional hubs for these entrepreneurs. So they have support networks in the bioregions that they're serving or want to serve in, right? And so, yeah, we're still young in our startup. This is Seeds of DAO was essentially started right before COVID, but it's been an idea that's, we didn't quite know what it was going to turn out to be, but we knew we wanted to be in we knew education was going to be a huge part of it. And we knew entrepreneurs and business was going to be a huge part of it too. And so our mission for Seeds of DAO, like right before COVID, when we were starting this business was, and just doing the podcast and trying to get an idea of what we wanted to do. The mission was, how can we build local regenerative economies, right? And we felt like the entrepreneur was that keystone species that was willing to take on the risk to make a difference and to work through difficult challenges and to build a community and build a team around those things and also work with other entrepreneurs to change their local economies and to change and therefore change economies globally as well. Into regenerative ones. And so that was our beginning mission. It's continued to be our mission as we've grown into building out different parts of this business.
Yeah, it's a great mission. Just before we go into the sort of how you can help people that are listening, the permaculture professionals, do you want to just explain the Valley of Death quickly, just because I know there's okay, that initial it might be helpful for people who are experiencing this or that are in it and don't know they're in it. I'm in it. I don't know which part I'm at yet.
Yeah. So the Valley of Death is a term that entrepreneurs and people in the entrepreneurial space will often refer to, and it's when if you're looking at like a chart of growth for a business, right? They never look the same, right? They're usually like, in reality, the business is like this, right? It's all over the place. But some of the patterns that exist is like, in the beginning, you're starting from nothing. And then you go into debt, you go into a very risky part of your business, even if you don't go into debt for your business, and you kind of keep it, you know, paid for by your own bootstrapped ability from a day job or whatever. You go into this very risky area that a lot of people call the Valley of Death, and your revenue is non-existent, and you're learning and trying to validate the market. And then you maybe get some revenue, but you're still not profitable because now you have some more expenses in that business, right? But eventually you get out of that, right? And you're sustainable and you're making revenue, you're making profit. So that Valley of Death is when you're not profitable, you're very risky because you're very early stage. You don't really have long-term clients or anything like that established. And that's where Emily and I just really felt we could lend help to. But it's also one of those things that's where do you find the money for helping people, if that's your job, how do you find money helping people that don't necessarily have money or businesses that don't have money, right? And so the way that we looked at that was like we scaled to working with in the education side of things, right? And we try to work with as many people as we can in there and diversify our services in ways that allow for those entrepreneurs to be supported while also being able to support ourselves. And we could talk more about that as well.
Yeah. So let's just take it that I go to your I go to your monthly meeting. So but just pretend I'm a fresh permaculture professional, all full of enthusiasm. I've just started my own company. How can you help me? And all the different levels and stages.
So right now, our current services for those that are just fresh, like they just are maybe just they just took their PDC. I like to think of a lot of entrepreneurs that maybe they've had a business before, right? And then they take their PDC. I've actually heard this a couple times in people's stories, and they're like, "Man, my thought of the way business should be done is like completely new and changed now after going through my PDC." And so they come up with a business idea that's regenerative or permaculture designed. And for that entrepreneur, we have some early stage courses that you can get involved in. Specifically, one of the biggest things that is needed for early stage entrepreneurs is their marketing and branding and message. Right, to be able to get those first initial clients, you have to be able to understand how to speak to them. So we do a lot of market research, but we have a course for entrepreneurs to go through. That's one of our first courses, and then we have a few other courses that are being built. Some of them are on how you kind of do some dynamic governance modeling for your business, and so we're releasing some courses there, and then we're releasing some courses in finance and funding. That's one way that we're helping is to get these entrepreneurs the skill sets and help them build up competency in core areas of their business that are also taught by entrepreneurs that are doing regenerative enterprise work, right? And so it could be a farm, it could be anything in right relation to nature is how we're kind of defining these types of regenerative enterprises. And so the another way is you can come to like you do, Cormac. We have a lot of free events that we do as well. One of those is our think tank event that we do monthly. And really that's just like a support network for entrepreneurs. We get together and we chat through our challenges, right? You bring up a challenge, Cormac. You're great at being open and vulnerable. And that's something an entrepreneur has to learn is to be open and vulnerable and share what challenges they have so they can find solutions, right? Otherwise, if we keep those guarded, we never find solutions to them. And so that's one way monthly on the first Wednesday of the month, we come together as regenerative entrepreneurs all across the world, English speaking right now, but hopefully in other languages in the future as well, to work through our challenges as entrepreneurs and think those out together and help one another, support each other, and collaborate. So
Yeah,
that's another way
I really like
that
that
you
because it's because I'm like a all the way of partners we work with on various projects. I'm effectively a solopreneur. So to me that's my monthly meeting. So I try to get it. And just to hear other people, and just to me it's encouraging that there's all our entrepreneurs here at different stages in their journey and they're able to help you. And like the for me, like I was on it with Dan Halsey was there, and to be able to have that interaction with someone I may not have been able to talk to, and he was able to advise me on starting where he's at a different stage. So I like it like that. I try to make them all. I'm a 3-barn spell there, but for me, I would encourage anyone, and it's the contacts you make as well during that to see people do it, I think it's great that that's sort of like there's a showcase that there's other people in the same boat and they're actually successful entrepreneurs out there. So they'll not be in the valley of death forever.
Yes. That's huge to just have someone that's maybe even like four steps in front of you, not even that far ahead, right? And so you can actually kind of relate to them and they can relate to you. And that connection is like, I think, really important for early stage entrepreneurs and especially those that are very impact driven, right? If you want to create an impact and you feel like you're an island and you feel very alone, you can easily get into burnout. And so having that type of support network and having and collaborating with others, I think, is super important in those early stages, right? To really try and figure out ways that you don't have to do it all, especially as a regenerative entrepreneur. Like that in itself, I think, requires a certain level of collaboration. We're not going to be the big Amazons, Apple, you know, Googles of the world, right? That's just this one organization that's kind of taking over the world in their own way. We're going to be a bunch of smaller organizations that are collaborating with one another in a more regenerative circular economy, right?
A more decentralized yeah. network, people doing small things, but overall stronger. And then no one person can dictate what 10 other people's doing. So if you're constantly relying on big business to give you that feeder business, well, to me, it's much stronger decentralized again. And nobody's going to ever be a millionaire. That's a, no, nobody gets into this business to get rich or get rich quick.
You know, that's something that I hope that we can see more wealth in the regenerative movement. And yeah, so I'm not opposed to making good money by any means and having a good lifestyle in that process. And I think we need to see more entrepreneurs in this space believing that they can make decent money and be millionaires if they want to be millionaires. But it's not necessarily what they get into it for, like you said, right? It's for the passion. It's for the change that they're trying to build towards. It's for future generations. One of the biggest reasons why I'm doing this work is because I have four children and I get depressed if I think that I'm not doing something to help them live better than I lived. Right. I think there's some news out there, typically in the US, that they're saying that this coming generation, like my children's generation, is the first generation to not have it better than the prior generation. Right. Is what they're saying. And that we're going into a generational decline as far as, livelihood and lifestyle. That's interesting to think about, right? I don't want that to happen.
I would always say, by what metric? The corporate's metric? Or, like, is it up to me to teach my children that your annual income isn't the only metric you should be living by? It's, and especially now I think Idiocracy coming up, have you seen the movie? With all this AI coming, it basically a lot of the skills are being made sort of
irrelevant.
So you have to go back to people and go back to your basic sort of, you have to grow food, you have to learn how to feed yourself, you have to learn how to take care of yourself, because somebody's not, the way the changes are going. So I think that for me, it's, you have to change your metrics and change it to the eight forms of capital, rather than just your annual salary. And that's what I'm, big part of my motivation is to teach my children all these skills, so at least they have the basics to be able to food, water, shelter. And then if they do well and they earn money, well, that's great, but at least they have that core skills. So I don't know about the...
I would say that's very true. And easily you can have a very good quality of life if you understand other forms of capital and utilize them in your life, right? And so if you're caught in the current systems, and because I've been there, right? I've lived in you know, city areas where I felt like I was totally just like unable to break out of, you know, the current rat race, you could say, right? And it's very frustrating, I think, for a lot of people. And I think for them, it kind of feels like that, like their children are going to be caught in this system that is not serving them. I think very easily, if you change your mindset and your paradigm, it can quickly turn into a different type of lifestyle, right? But I also think that there's some truth in like quality of like air, quality of water, quality, all of these different things that you kind of look at of like, what are my children inheriting? And that can be very depressing as well. And at the same time, if you're not doing work to try and improve it is my thought. Because for me, there's a lot of, I've chatted with a few others about this as well, about hospice work, essentially, is what we're calling like sustainability, in my opinion, right? All this sustainable work is just less bad, right? How can we be less bad in our work? And for me, that's very uninspiring work to be caught up in, right? You're basically just waiting for this system to die out and do less bad until a new system emerges, right? For me, it's very, very much more inspiring if I'm working with businesses and I'm working to build business that is moving towards a new paradigm and creating a new mindset shift and doing what we're saying, that brings so much more inspiration into my work and so much more energy than just doing less bad, right?
No, I agree. Yeah. I agree. But most people start with less bad, and then hopefully the dial shifts, and then that's being positive and building their own communities, building their own systems, building their own networks, and then working together. So we got to the monthly meeting, which I think is great. What other services do you provide for likes of myself? Is there a paid service?
Yeah,
then?
So there's a few paid services. Some are a good fit for many, and some are a better fit for others. We're building out those course materials. We have some like one-off branding and marketing services that help you kind of get your messaging right, and start to build marketing systems that are doing marketing in what I would call a regenerative fashion, right? That's not just trying to exploit for greater profits, but actually really truly building towards influencing people to make better decisions that are helping you to create the regenerative change that you want to create with your enterprise. And there's those. So we're helping to create messaging through that. So more of a done with you or done alongside you services rather than kind of the DIY courses. And so if you're interested in those, I would love to chat with you. And then we're trying to go after just a few businesses that we know we can really kind of scale, because we have to scale. This is the only place where I could say that I want to see tremendous growth in this industry is regenerative related industries, right? Other industries, I'm thinking degrowth is a great model for most industries at this point, right? How can we slowly degrow these businesses so we don't destroy economies, but also transition our economy into, but we have to scale up this work. So what are some, we're working, trying to find on average working with 10 really strong businesses, what I would call like regenerative unicorns, right? And I have a really great team that we're developing in doing this. We're kind of a regenerative startup studio or hopefully eventually a venture studio, right? And right now I have a really strong team member that's working on the finance side of things, getting people ready for like a really strong Series A funding. If you're familiar with, it's like if you're pre-revenue, that usually the funding round is called pre-seed. I'll give you this definition. If you're a early stage, like you're starting to get revenue, you got your first clients, but you need some capital to get consistent clients. You're like seed stage. And if you're really ready for growth, you're between seed and a Series A funding, right? And that's we're trying to build out a good startup venture studio for those types of clients. And we're working with, we have a few that we think are promising. And I would love to talk to you if you're in this space right now, to really try to have some strong businesses that can be good role models for the rest of us, and show us how we can scale regeneration and permaculture into our local and larger economies as well.
That sounds exciting stuff. A couple of questions around that. So I'm more or less bootstrapping, right? And I always thought that I'm never taking on investors or anything like that, because then you're answering the investors and you're not answering to sort of other things, and then things can go awry. What would you say to sort of allay them fears, or would you encourage someone like myself to take on investors or go that route?
I would not encourage most businesses to take on investment capital. I really wouldn't. You got to have the right investors, especially if you're an impact-driven business, or else it does turn into something, you know, like you get essentially put on someone else's agenda, and it becomes a part of a system that you're trying to work against, right? And trying to move away from, at least. So I wouldn't recommend it for many, but there is a certain type of business that we're looking at that's really needing additional capital, because it's going to take longer for them to scale, or they have something that needs to be commercialized in order to help us transition. For example, like Brian von Herzen of he's a great example of this right now, of the Climate Foundation. You've talked with Brian before, I think, Cormac. He's been on our monthly meetings. And the Climate Foundation, Brian's one of the kind of originators of marine permaculture. He's done a lot for marine permaculture, right?
I remember him, right?
Yeah. So in that, like, there's nothing commercialized about marine permaculture really at this time. I mean, they're starting, but it's a long journey for us to see products and services in our local area that are derived from that type of, you know, even marine permaculture restoration, right? That can actually support itself and do regenerative work. Well, that type of business needs philanthropy money. It needs all sorts of different types of money and investment in to become commercialized. And that's those are some of the businesses that we probably want to see really get supported to scale. And if someone's willing to take on the risk to start those types of businesses, we want to support them as much as we can, so that we can all benefit from someone that could scale that way, right? And so there's things like that. There's things that if we could start transitioning some of our farms over to agroforestry, you know, what are some of the businesses and infrastructure that needs to be built out for us to be able to do that? Well, some of those things are going to take additional capital, because you don't necessarily have the time to build it out bootstrapped, or it's not, the business would fail if you had to bootstrap it, right? It needs additional capital. It needs additional runway to be able to get up or get through the valley of death and not just crash in the canyon, right?
Yeah.
And that's what I would say. But that's not every business, and I would say it's not the majority of regenerative businesses by far.
All right, but you still work with smaller business on their branding and things like that, them services.
Yes, wow. Yes, and that's why we have the courses. That's why we have some kind of done for you, done with you kind of one-off services. This stuff is like the startup, the venture studio is like, we work with no more than 10 businesses at a given time. And it, we're working really on retainer model fees with them, right? And we're a part of it is probably taking on equity. Like we're really investing and putting some risk in these businesses ourselves, right? And so that is a bit of kind of the spectrum, I guess you could say. We want to be able to transition, especially I love the thought of like, how do we get the entrepreneur that's like what I was when I was going to school for entrepreneurship? Who goes to school for entrepreneurship? I don't know. I do. But if you get a student that's going to business school that or anything in school, but knows that they want to, maybe they're an engineering degree, but knows they want to start a business and start a business that does good. How do I catch that entrepreneur before they get into the extractive systems and just kind of fall in line with everybody else, right? And that's a part of what Seeds of DAO is about, right? We're an education platform so that we get early stage entrepreneurs, student entrepreneurs, and everybody kind of moving through that valley of death at different stages. We're trying to help them and doing it in a decentralized way, because I'm not going to be the educator for every course. I have to have lots of education partners. I'm not going to be the only incubator, accelerator program that we're referring to, because there's so many out there that are doing great things that can specifically help for certain types of business, right? And so we're being what we need to be for the network to flourish is our goal, right? And so it's a very hard business model that I'm trying to develop here, because I'm trying not to be competition for an incubation or acceleration or an education company or even a bioregional hub area, because that's part of our partnerships that we're building. I'm trying to be a way to support each of those partners together, right? And allow them to be a part of a platform that helps and supports these entrepreneurs, because we have to see more of these entrepreneurs succeed. And it's harder to succeed as a regenerative entrepreneur than it is for another entrepreneur in this extractive model, because they're using the extraction exploitation to help raise up their business through this valley of death.
Yeah. No, I definitely recommend these to anybody starting out to join the community, join the online community, go to the meetings. And even if you go to a couple of a year, you're still sort of giving that encouragement to keep going and to tap into the expertise that's there. I think it's a great service you're providing. Thank you very much for me for being there. Is there anything else that we haven't covered along what you do or provide? Or
you know, I think we've covered a lot, and I do. Well, maybe there is something that I do want to promote and pitch is the bioregional hubs. If we can't associate our businesses to bioregions that we are supporting. Or that we are influencing, that's one of the reasons why we're having some of the hardest problems with entrepreneurship and business enterprise building in general, is we don't focus our attention on the bioregions that we're impacting, right? And so if we can reassociate those efforts, our entrepreneurial efforts into the bioregions that we're involved in, that we live in, that we are impacting, like most of the company farming companies that are making good money in Panama are USDA organic companies that no one sees those bananas. No one sees those cacao fruits in Panama. It just gets shipped away to other countries. Like how those business models don't necessarily serve the bioregions, nor do they support any regenerative model, even if they're an organic farm, right? And so the idea is to build regenerative bioregional hubs for entrepreneurs to work together, to support one another, to come to do retreats, to do workshops together, and to collaborate. And that's a big part of the business model that we're building out. Our first bioregional hub that we're going to have ownership in, it's the only hub that we're going to take ownership in, is in Panama. And the other ones, we're just going to partner with others that have places that we can host retreats and that are willing to gather entrepreneurs together, right? And there's a lot of those out there. So if you're either a gatherer for your bioregion, or you're a place where we can host events in a regenerative inspiring location, we're looking for those partners as well.
I'll get back to you when I get some land.
Yes.
Definitely.
Or you could be the gatherer, because that's what we're noticing is like they're usually not even the same person. They're same entity. It's usually an entity or a person is gathering people in their area to do regenerative enterprise building, and then there's someone that is able to host, like they're a farm or they're a retreat center that's done regenerative work, and they're hosting, but they're usually not a lot of times gathering because they're so focused on just hosting people, right? And so they're usually two different people, and it's the other way that the person that's gathering doesn't really necessarily hasn't been focusing on building a place for people, right? And space for people. So it's very interesting that we're kind of finding through our research that there's two different types of partners in each bioregion that's are kind of required for a hub to really start to take effect.
Yeah, so that's just, I could just go on the website now and start doing that, start getting involved in that. Is there?
Yeah. So join the community is the first Seeds of DAO .com. So DAO is spelled like the DAO Day Change. So it's TAO.com. You can join the community. If you want to be an education partner, you're an entrepreneur, you just want to have some support, join us for events. If you want to be a hub partner, whatever it is, just, you can reach out to me as well, directly. My email is joshua@seedsofdao.com. And then I'm very available on our community chat and other, spaces within the community as well.
Josh, that's been really good. Really interested. Hopefully we'll get our course on your platform as well. So our course is PDC the Professional. So where we take PDC graduates and we prepare them for the marketplace by teaching them digital design, some website building, some social marketing, and then provide a lot of resources that we've picked up over the last couple of years, like yourself and ethical marketing, all these parts of businesses that maybe not so obvious to people who are just starting out. So we're trying to pack that all and prepare entrepreneurs then for basically give them this package and let them go and do their best.
Yes. That's so needed, especially for those that are really excited after their PDC and know they want to do something. Like that's like the best. There's so many designers that we need out there and we just don't have enough of them. After they get their PDC to really just dive in and know how to build a business from it. Right.
Yeah. Josh, thank you very much. That's been the Permaculture Vine podcast, episode 50, with myself and with Josh Prieto. Thanks, Josh.
Thank you, Cormac.